We're going to call to order the meeting of the Senate Committee on Rural Communities and Economic Development. Today is April 9th, 2013. We have one work session and two bills to hear, and I think we got all the paperwork for our work session, so we're happy about that.
Cheers.
Yeah, cheers. Yes, exactly. So we're going to begin by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 462. We'll have a short explanation, and while we're inviting our two senators to come on up to the dais and to personally thank them for their work that they did on this. So.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the original bill defined type 1, 2, and 3 feedstocks and then prohibited the composting facility processing an undefined amount of type 3 feedstocks from being located within a certain amount of miles of an incorporated city, except when it's in an exclusive farm use zone. The original bill has, we have a dash 2 amendment, which just came in, so I'll let the senators explain that one. But it replaces the measure, and so it'll be significantly different from what the original bill did.
With that, we'll have an explanation.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Senator Bruce Starr. I have the distinct privilege of representing Western Washington County. What you have before you is Senate Bill 462. The bill is related to composting, and it's a convenient relating clause so that we can address an issue that, honestly, a year ago I didn't anticipate addressing. But due to circumstances that occurred in North Plains in my district, we are here to offer you an amendment to Senate Bill 462. The amendment is the product of a work group where we brought stakeholders together, legislators, state agencies, affected property owners who have been affected, significantly affected, I might add, by a composting facility in my district. We also, the stakeholders, the industry that is engaged in this particular business was involved in our work group. Composting, what we're really talking about, composting is something that's been going on forever. I mean, that's nothing really new about that. What's new, I think, in this particular conversation is the composting of commercial food stock. And what really has brought this kind of to a head is the City of Portland's decision to do that commercial food stock composting process, both on the commercial level and also at the residential level. And all of that material was shipped out to North Plains, or a facility next door to North Plains. It creates a pretty significant, or at least it did, a pretty significant odor. That's what brought us to this conversation here. From my perspective, Senator Olson has a similar but different situation in Clackamas County that he can talk about. What this bill and the amendments, the dash 2 amendments, contemplate is a change in process. We're not talking about where we locate these composting facilities, but we're talking about how we site them and the process that would bring them to a certain community. And the dash 2 amendment really contemplates two process changes or in additions to current state law. One is a pre-application meeting where a company that wants to do a composting, open a composting facility, goes to a local government, city or county, and the Department of Environmental Quality, who's responsible for this particular issue under state law, would be part of that conversation early on. That's important. An early conversation about the impacts, and so that the proponent of a particular site would know a lot of this information up front rather than coming at it in the back end. The other piece of this is involving the public early on so that we don't surprise people. People are apprised of what's happening in their community, in their area. That's, in a nutshell, what the dash 2 amendments does. Obviously, there's some details that surround both of those things, but in a nutshell, that's what it is. It's a process point. It's a process issue that we address in these dash 2 amendments. Personally, I'd like to do more at some point in the future talking about where we would site these types of facilities. I believe, and I would hope that folks would agree that composting of this material is in the public interest rather than landfilling it. And, you know, unfortunately, that creates this dilemma for us. If it's a good idea to do this, well, then we have to figure out where to do it. And it doesn't, it's not conducive, shall we say, to doing it in an area that's near where people live or where people work or where kids go to school, just because of the commercial nature of the activity and, you know, the potential for odor as the composting process works. So, Mr. Chair, that's kind of in a nutshell what brings us here today. The Dash 2 amendments need an additional tiny little tweak, tiny little change. They're pretty, really, really pretty close, but there will be a need for an additional tweak and before you could potentially move the bill to a work session and move it forward. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to turn the microphone over to my colleague to talk about his situation in Clackamas County and add additional detail.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Bart Sugar, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Alan Olson. I represent Senate District 20, which is the heart of Clackamas County. It's kind of an irony that while Senator Starr is dealing with his North Plains situation, I have had a situation come forward in Clackamas County in the Redland District where a particular group of folks wanted to compost 50 tons per acre on rural high-value farmland, and the community came together and was able to successfully move this composting facility out of that area because of land use issues. And what we found out was that because there really wasn't any transparency to the process, The folks out there were caught off guard by this situation, and the county itself misinterpreted the rules and allowed this group of folks to compost 20 tons per acre, I'm sorry, and that violated land use law because it wasn't continuous and it wasn't consistent with farming practices in the area. So the land use application was denied. So we felt that it would be appropriate to come together and put together a bill that would form some transparency for the people anywhere where composting would be done. Senator Starr and I brought together, as he mentioned, a robust group. Many people participated. And all agencies, groups that would be involved with stakeholders, neighbors of where the compost sites were, and we came up with this document that is a very good piece of legislation that will allow not only the manufacturer or the person considering putting in a composting site to have an upfront look at what he needs to overcome through rules and permits, but also it allows the neighbors to see what's coming in their area and allow them to have input. This bill is supported by everyone that was in our work group, and I think it's a fine piece of legislation, but as Senator Starr said, it's probably just a start. We probably need to look at some other, perhaps land use laws that would better clarify where these facilities can be. And we do have to, as Senator Starr said, we do have to consider these materials because rather than put them in the landfill, let's put them back into good use. But there has to be more consideration to the folks where this material is going to be composted at. So I would urge your support of this bill and let the good senator and myself make those minor tweaks to it so that when it comes to the work session, it's a good piece of legislation that will be easily passed the other side. Thank you very much.
Any questions for either? Yes, Senator Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Olson, I am a composter on my own land. 2 acres, and we do a lot of that. But I wanted to ask you about the type 3 feedstocks because you've included dead animals there, and I guess that's where I would draw the line because of things like rabies, bubonic plague that are sometimes in the animals. And I think it has to do with getting the temperature high enough, you know, to destroy. So did you have any discussion in the work group about, you know, when things should be buried instead of composted?
Well, that probably would be a good question. I'm sorry. Chair Roblin, Senator Close. That probably would be a very good question for DEQ And this is one of the areas where we need to adjust the verbiage. This was inadvertently put in there and was supposed to be not quite so graphic, if you will. But you are correct. But our main proposal was that if you had a composter that would do type 1 or type 2 composting and they wanted to change to a type 3 compost, this bill would allow the public to know what those changes would be, such as in Senator Starr's area where they actually took in more product than they had originally planned on. This bill would allow them to go out to the public and say, by the way, we are going to make a change to our composting facility. And that's what the whole designation is, and we'd like to make that very clear that if a change was going to be made at the composting facility, this bill would allow that public transparency so everyone would know what would happen.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for this panel?
Thank you both. Thank you very much.
We're going to invite up Palmer Mason and it looks like Stephanie Raisin, whoever you're bringing with you.
Yeah.
Chair Roble, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Palmer Mason. I'm the government relations manager with DEQ. I have with me Stephanie Rawson. I apologize, Representative Roble, you couldn't read my writing. Stephanie is one of our solid waste specialists and has done quite a bit of work on the composting facilities in the northwest region of the state. So if I may start on Senate Bill 462, want to let you all know that DEQ is supportive of the bill. We are very grateful for the approach that the two senators took to this issue. They had several work group meetings where they brought in the agencies as well as the public and business owners and others to talk about this bill. And I think the concept that we all arrived at under their leadership was a very good one, and that is if we're going to put in a facility that potentially can be disrupted to quality of life through nuisance, particularly odor, and may represent some environmental risk, it makes sense both for the public, for the agencies, and for the person proposing the facility to know about the issues up front. And so the idea is before the local government land use development process begins, if you're going to build a commercial compost facility, you have a meeting with the locals and the state agencies, particularly DEQ, my agency, to talk about the issues that may come with the proposed facility. And again, I think that's helpful for an operator or owner of a facility. They know sort of what the regulatory issues are up front. They can try to cost those out as they're going forward with the facility. It also lets the local government know what the potential issues are as they go through the land use approval process. And then, as the senators pointed out, there is also included in the bill, or in the dash 2, I guess more accurately, the idea that the public should get an early opportunity to comment and learn about the proposed facility. So I think those are all good government steps that we're taking here. I also want to add that I was very encouraged to hear the two senators publicly state their support of compost. Not only is that good environmentally, because we want to keep that material out of the landfill, it's actually a useful product, and by keeping it out of the landfill, we're dealing with greenhouse gas emissions and lowering those, but we're taking this product and making it useful as a soil amendment, as a nutrient that can be added back to soil for greater productivity, and quite frankly, beyond those environmental reasons, it's particularly encouraging to hear their support of composting because it's an economic product. We can actually generate more economic activity by taking that material and keeping it out of a landfill. The processing, the handling of it generates more jobs and more economic development. So it's kind of one of those rare win-wins that we're all looking for. So I was, again, very encouraged to hear their support of encouraging composting. As the two senators indicated, there's some technical issues that we'd like to continue to talk to them about in the amendment. And, again, their door has been open, so I feel like we should be able to do that. But generally, DEQ is very, very supportive of this, and we'll certainly take any questions the committee may have.
Do you have any questions? Anything to state right now? Or just...
I do not. Thank you.
Okay, very good. So do you want to ask your question?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had the health concerns about composting. You know, I'll just give you an example. Bubonic plague is from the fleas that are on the rats, I understand. And I'm just wondering if something like that would, you know, with a dead rat, would survive a composting process, and that you might want to exempt dead animals because of disease. And has the Department of Health been assisting in this process at all?
Well, if I may, Chair Roman, Senator Close, I'll start with your last question first. The Department of Health or Oregon Health Authority hasn't been directly involved in this conversation. And I'll let Stephanie sort of take you through the technical process in greater detail. We issue permits for compost facilities, including the Type 3, which would include dead animals. When we are permitting those facilities, we're looking at the level of environmental risk as well as the public health risk. And generally, those facilities probably of that type are going to require one of we have two permit types. They're going to require the more advanced permit type, and that'll include an operational plan that will spell out how they're going to manage the material safely, as well as how they're going to deal with odor issues and things like that. So I'm not really aware of any problems, but Stephanie, if you want to add anything or explain the process in a little more detail,
sure. Chair Roblin, Senator Close. The Type 3 definition of feedstocks allow dead animals.
Give your name first.
Oh, yeah. Pardon me. Stephanie Rawson with DEQ. The Type 3 feedstock definition allows dead animals. We do understand that there are numerous concerns with the proposed composting of dead animals. There have been a couple facilities in Eastern Oregon that has done so. Staff has worked with other agencies as appropriate, including the Health Department, Department of Ag, to address some of the concerns that have been raised. Typically to this point, it's been dairy cows. We do coordinate with the Health Department as necessary. We don't get many requests for dead animals. We leave it as an option should someone give us a sufficient application that can demonstrate that they can address all the concerns.
Thank you.
Senator, I'd like to follow up on that. Can you go in a little more detail? You're saying dead animals. I'm assuming, are we talking domestic? Are we talking farm animals? What's the limitations? And can you walk us through the process? I'm somewhat familiar with composting, and I think as Senator Close has said, I'm trying to figure out how that process is going to work to the point of decomposing, you know, getting the bone material, et cetera.
Senator, the process that has been used in a couple examples have been where the animals, let me step back. Most of the animals that have been proposed to DEQ for composting has been dairy or deceased animals found on the side of the road. ODOT had a study at one point that they did some amount of composting for lack of a better term, roadkill. And so there's been a couple different processes that has been implemented. One for such animals as horses or dairy cow is that there's a large layer of wood chips or some other material to absorb any liquid that's generated. And then they're encompassed by the wood chips or other suitable material. And then the animals are left. There's no turning of it. It's depending on the operator's proposal, it could be anywhere from 30 to 60 to 90 days before the material is turned to allow the decomposition process to occur. In some instances, the material is processed beforehand to size reduce the material to increase the decomposition process. So the concerns that we look at as a baseline first thing is, how are you going to control the environment so any leachate or any liquid that's generated during the composting process is contained and controlled? And typically there needs to be some sort of cover, either a commercial tarp type material or what we would be considered a biocover, so wood chips, composted material that's covering it to sufficient depth to prevent any kind of attraction of other rodents, flies, et cetera.
Right. If I can follow up. Sure. So I'm assuming, thank you for the detail, but I think just to make sure we understand, this would be something that, say, if you had a facility that's actually, let's say, qualify to take in type 3 as it's defined now, when someone was coming with one of these, in this case I say dead animals, they would notify the operator so they would be ready to have accept it and put it into this special, because it's going to take a special location or procedure and then possibly using lime or something else that might help decomposition and stuff like that. So it's not someone's going to be able to just drive up and dump it. There's going to be a operational plan, knowing that this is coming into the facility.
Senator, that's correct. And we're going to provide a little more scrutiny as we review it because of the type of material and the nature of it that increases the chances for potential problems if it's not properly operated.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for these two? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Russ Dondero, Ellen Sanders, and Betty Reynolds. And don't forget to mention your name before you start speaking. Thank you.
Senator Roblin and members of the committee, my name is Russ Dondero, D-O-N-D-E-R-O. I live in Forest Grove, Oregon, 1506 Olympus Lane. I'm usually here in the legislature talking about housing and affordable housing, things like this. But I happen to be a member of the WCCAN group in Washington County, which means Washington County Citizens Action Network. And we've been very involved in the North Plains issue and the debate in support of the community, which is raised before our county commissioners in a year and a half of hearings over the last year and a half in three different hearings, significant questions about that particular composting operation, which only includes type 1 and type 2. And so out of observing that process and in solidarity with the folks in North Plains, I have become involved as a member of WECAN. More importantly, I happen to drive by North Plains regularly. I also play golf at a rather famous golf course in North Plains, just a half a mile away. And I'm very aware in both venues, driving by and playing around a golf. Occasionally, there is a smell which I can't locate and realize now is the smell from that composting facility. And it's more than just a smell. It also poses a health hazard because of flies. And so, again, we would very much like to make sure that, I am speaking for myself and for WCCAN, would like to make sure that this legislation, followed up by other bigger pieces, really prevent this kind of location of this kind of facility down the road. Because in Oregon, as our population is growing, everyone in Oregon is going to face this dilemma, where to locate type 2, type 1, and type 3 waste in a way that is not going to pose a public health hazard to average citizens and communities. In reading the original Dash 1 bill proposed, I haven't had the luxury of seeing the Dash 2, which nobody has because it's a slow process. But I would like to just briefly comment, as I did in our stakeholders meeting two weeks ago, that the key here is the process. And as long as the process is transparent, I think that's the important part. And I think given the way the bill is configured, as best I know, it is very transparent, both in the pre-application process, but also in the citizen input process. My major question, which is, I think, Senator Close is raising, is when you get to type 3 situations, we probably need a more robust system than is involved in North Plains, because nothing like that is happening in North Plains, to my knowledge. Although there are rodents and there are flies, and I've had complaints from the staff of Pumpkin Ridge, where I play golf. I'm not a member, but I'm a Ghost Guard holder, which reminded me that they even get that fly problem. So But that's my opinion. I'm not representing Pumpkin Ridge. So the question I have is, if a public process is open, then I assume at the city and county level, it's also appealable. And that's the thing I want to raise right now. I think it's very important, and I assume that if this bill passes, all the normal appeal processes are in play, LCDC, LUBA, et cetera. And I think DEQ obviously plays a central role, but also, as Senator Close has raised in her question, we're talking about public health issues too. So I think, and we've had that conversation within the stakeholders group, that a bunch of state agencies as well as the counties are all involved. And I think, you know, we need to make sure there's a checkoff system so that everybody is heard from and everybody is assured that there aren't going to be any unintended consequences. Now, let me get to the end of my comments. In the bill itself, as we noted, and as far as I know, it still exists in this form, it talks about the rules must include a checklist, which includes odor management and monitoring, groundwater protection, stormwater and leaching management, noise abatement, traffic impact mitigation, fire prevention and protection, community outreach, feedstock management, and waste management. That's a pretty good list of things to check off and to make sure we've dotted our I's and crossed our T's. My final comment is that I would hope that, as I said in our stakeholders meeting, that, and the language may be in the new Dash 2 bill, that we adhere to the highest standards of the industry, not what's practicable, but what's highest standards. Right now, the word practicable is in there. I think it should be the highest standards established by the industry and by scientific investigation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman Rowan and members of the committee, my name is Ellen Saunders. I live just west of North Plains in Manning, Oregon. I have been involved in a combination of activities, including siting of the garbage dump many years ago, so I've been sort of on top of garbage for a long time. And I do support composting, but I'm very concerned about this particular facility in North Plains because it was expanded without community acknowledgement of what was going to really happen. And I have to tell you, the stench is really dreadful. So when they named their group Stop the Stench, they weren't kidding. And that meant that the communities...
Push the microphone just a little forward.
Away from you.
Except him, away from
okay.
Yeah. That's better.
I'm used to using...
I know.
other kinds of mics, whisper mics. So my concern is that in siting facilities in the future, away from community... involvement is really my biggest concern because we didn't have any way to be involved in this commitment before. Suddenly, people couldn't go outside. They couldn't have barbecues. The stench was so far dispersed that we were talking about miles in every direction. We're in the hills. So that's a very big concern. And so the other thing that concerns me because of this particular issue is that the legal recourse must be continued. In other words, a community must be able to have the feeling that not only what their original plans are and what has been permitted, if it doesn't listen to the community and their needs, that they have some kind of legal resource to go back to. That's one of the things. The other thing is in rural districts, notification needs to be much wider than the 500 feet, which is, you know, sort of a standard. So we need to have notification, preferably at least a half mile or a mile away from the facility, because properties are going to be affected at that range at a bare minimum. unincorporated areas also are locked into their county commissioners. They don't necessarily have city councils to go to complain. And so I'm concerned that the county commissioners are astute to the rural problems of the rural districts, which in many cases they are not. They're predominantly involved with city and more urban issues. So I want to make sure that there is some kind of capacity of the rural districts to address their issues and be heard. And lastly, the property devaluation, the pests, the flies, the smells, those are all very big concerns. And it is my concern also that when we have big facilities, we end up with transportation of large quantities of material into a particular area. I would like to see a lot of much smaller facilities sited rather than huge commercial facilities sited, because I think the impact would be minimalized a great deal by having smaller facilities that dealt more regionally and locally with the compost needs of that community, rather than having, say, in this case, all of Portland metropolitan garbage dumped basically in Washington County's rural districts. We fought, 25 years ago, we fought the siting of Metro's garbage up on Bacona Road. So I really do believe in composting. I think it's very important, but I also think that the highest scientific standards must be maintained. And the smaller the facility, the more likelihood we are going to have a good relationship with the community and the neighborhood, and the amount of smells and concerns are going to be limited and manageable. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. I'm Betty Reynolds. I'm a member of the West Lynn Wilsonville School Board, and I'm appearing today on behalf of Keith Steele, who is the chair of the school board. Two schools within the district, which house over 1,000 middle and primary school children and staff, and two practice fields used by thousands of students district-wide, are located directly across from a proposed composting facility. The facility would compost, among other things, food waste and livestock manure. A conditional use permit has been issued by Clackamas County, and the board has expressed concern about the safety of students and staff based on the likely odor, traffic, dust, noise, and bioaerosol hazards generated by the facility. We appreciate your leadership in considering this issue and any continuing efforts you can take to protect the safety of students and staff. We understand that you're considering amendments to the original bill today, and we urge you to keep in mind the impact of composting facilities on the full range of those those affected, including schools and students. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel?
Yes.
Senator Batcher.
Thank you, Chair Roblin. What land zoning are these two facilities located on? What's the zoning? Does anybody know?
The North Plains is within the unincorporated but urban growth boundaries of Washington County, which is why it was originally located there. Chair Roblin, okay. Senator Barshinger. So it's within the county's jurisdiction, and that's why it's important the county be held accountable.
So is it on exclusive farmland, or does anybody know what the zoning is?
I don't have the answer to that question.
Once it's inside the
UGB,
it's not farmland. It's adjacent. I mean, right. Washington County, and it's surrounded by farmland in that area.
It probably was.
That's why I was asking.
Yeah. It
used to be.
Senator Roblin, Senator Barchinger. The proposed facility in Westland Wilsonville School District is also in unincorporated Clackamas County. I believe it's been designated as parts of the area have been designated urban reserve, but the current zoning is FF5, farm forest, 5-acre minimum.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
I'd like to respond to that question. North Plains has expanded its city boundaries recently, and this facility was already in place when that happened. I have visited the facility, and it is almost on top of the city. It's not a big city, obviously, but it is big enough to be impacted immediately by this facility, not only with rodents, but a lot of seagulls, and so those properties surrounding the city, the commercial areas, are being very seriously affected.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Next, we have Ray Phelps and Caitlin Voss.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, Caitlin Soss here today representing Columbia Biogas. We are a renewable energy facility located in the Cawley neighborhood in Portland, and we will not be impacted by this bill, but we are thankful for Senator Olson and Senator Starr inviting us to the work group. We are here today in support of it because we have gone through a good neighbor agreement. We have gone through most everything and beyond what this bill addresses, and would just like to share our experience that we identified the potential risks, worked with the community, and believe what Palmer Mason said earlier, that identifying those risks and concerns up front is paramount to the success of a company and its survival, and developing those ongoing relationships with the community will help us in the long term. So we're really here just today in support of this bill.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ray Phelps. I am a manager with Republic Services, a solid waste management company. Our firm owns and operates a facility that composts food waste and other woody waste products and has done so, not with the food waste, but with the woody waste for the past 20 years. Had a very successful operation, and we are the first site that was permitted by DEQ to process food waste, and we've been doing it very successfully the last couple of years. As a matter of fact, the agricultural products that are grown in that area, which we use our material to test, are coming out bigger and juicier and bending the vines and so forth. So it is a definite enhancement. Our facility is located 60 miles from the Greater Portland metropolitan area, and frankly, I'm here to tell you that 23 years ago, I was the CFO and Director of Operations or Director of Administration for Metro. And in that capacity, we formed a partnership with Rydell Industries and started a compost facility on Columbia Boulevard by the racetrack. It's kind of in that general area. Why I'm orientated that way, I don't know. But nevertheless, in that time, we spent, I think it was $16, $17 million. These things are not inexpensive. And it opened and closed in 9 months. Rydell Industries is out of business. And I'll bet you'll never guess why. Odor. Here we are 23 years later, and we're repeating the very same failure formula that we set out 23 years ago. You have in the bill that Senators Starr and Olson are bringing forth before you, had that bill existed after the mess that was created 23 years ago, we would not be sitting here spending our time on this legislation. That bill would stop those kinds of facilities from siting because it has the components that were lacking when we did it 23 years ago, so we're repeating the history. One, we didn't get the technical people who regulate these facilities involved until very late in the process. Big mistake. Currently, until now, that's continued to happen. This legislation would prevent that from happening. Secondly, 500 feet is ridiculous. You need at least a half a mile to a mile. The legislation proposes a half a mile, and I think that'll probably work with regard to notification of interested parties. Thirdly, you're notifying not only the owners, which is also standard, but you're also notifying those people that actually live there. There's a huge difference, and I'm sure you folks are well aware of that. An awful lot of people own property, they don't live there, and they rent it to others.
those people get missed in the notification process unless they hear about it in a secondary way. So this legislation that is before you, I believe, is going to solve those problems. It is a complete fix? No. But it's a heck of a long way down the road, and we would now begin to become more sensitive to the community. We can compost in this state, and we should. We have too much waste still going in landfill. I own landfills, but nevertheless, it's a fact. It's the last waste stream of any significance that we can divert from a landfill responsibly. And we need to do it responsibly. That means you have to do it where people don't live. It simply won't work if you site them where people live. Technology may advance and improve. That remains to be seen. I'm not down on technology. I'm just telling you the state of the art right now, it won't work. Secondly, you have the difference between composting woody waste and composting food waste. Very, very different processes. And you have to understand each. And I think lastly, there has been a great deal of talk about the necessity to site these facilities close in to where the material is generated. The young lady that was sitting here, previous panel, who talked about dealing with landfills in the metropolitan area years ago, I'm the one she was pushing out the door. I tried to site one, and God love her, she won, I didn't. And the community of the greater Portland area are much better off because of it. But what the lesson taught me, and what the lesson I think demonstrates for all of us, is a community is willing to pay more for a service that they desire and need, as long as it's not at the expense of the quality of their life. Metropolitan Portland area has 43% of Oregon's population, and the criteria we've got to have the compost facility nearby sort of begs the question of how we are satisfactorily disposing of waste in a landfill located 150 miles east, one way, of Portland. 43% of the people get by with a landfill 150 miles away. I am sure that if you checked, you would find that the people in the greater Portland area can do just fine with these facilities properly located in an area that is more conducive to doing it, and that typically is not where people are. So I'll be glad to answer questions. I do have one other comment. Had to do with the animals. We do not accept the animals at our facility. ODOT has asked us a couple of times. We simply will not do that. I don't know all the science and all the reasons for it. I just know we don't. And I believe it's because the difference between compostable and biodegradable is significant. And our process represents about a 30 to 45 day process, and you're not going to degrade an animal that quickly. Plus the fact we're not equipped to deal with reducing the size and so on. The woman from DEQ was absolutely right. We're just simply not going to take on that investment. I'm glad to answer any questions.
Any questions for this panel? Senator Krasinski?
Yeah, sir, it sounds like, based on the amendment that's before us, that the facility you're talking about that you're currently involved in is either a Type 1 feedstock or a Type 2.
No, sir, it's 3.
It's a 3.
Yes, sir.
But they refuse the animals.
Okay. We refuse the animals, which is our prerogative. We have been doing food waste for a little over 2 years. It's all of the post-consumer. It's a process that requires very special handling, special equipment, and so on and so forth. It's not a windrow process, which is basically what you do with wood waste.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Thank you both.
You're welcome.
Is there anyone else that would like to speak to Senate Bill 462 that hasn't done so today? Thank you. We're going to close our public hearing on Senate Bill 462. And we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 708. And Dave Honeycutt, if you want to come up and bring whoever you want with you, and we'll have a short conversation.
A short conversation.
With a lot of people to speak, so we'll keep this one probably in a timeline so that we don't.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 708 directs a county with land use jurisdiction to process land use applications and to make land use decisions and limited land use decisions when the city has not caused a comprehensive plan and land use regulations to be acknowledged within 4 years after the date of incorporation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, speaking in support of Senate Bill 708. To my immediate right is Lowell Patton, a property owner in the city of Damascus who's been there for quite some time. And to the at the far end is Bill Cox, who's been a land use attorney in this state since the days when I was eating Lucky Charms and watching Gilligan's Island after school. So. He's been here for quite
experience.
A while. Yes, he is certainly experienced. Senate Bill 708 is the result of a unfortunate circumstance that I think is probably the first and only time that this has happened, and it goes clear back to Senate Bill 100, and I'll explain it as quickly as I can. But when Senate Bill 100 was passed in 1973 and created our state land use system, it required cities and counties within the state, all cities and counties, to enact comprehensive plans and zoning ordinances and to send those comprehensive plans and zoning ordinances to the Land Conservation and Development Commission, LCDC, for acknowledgement. Once the commission acknowledged the zoning ordinance and the comprehensive plan, then the city or the county would use that comp plan and zoning ordinance as the basis for making all of their land use decisions. Back in 73, when we created a new system as part of Senate Bill 100, the legislature added language in that bill, which became ORS 197-757, and we deal with that in Section 2 of this bill. What that section provides is that cities that were incorporated cities were required to get their comp plans and zoning ordinances done within 4 years after the date of incorporation. In 2000, we'll move forward now to 2002. In 2002, Metro, the Portland Area Regional Government, expanded the urban growth boundary and brought in a significant area of Clackamas County into the Metro UGB. So the land that we're talking about that would be affected by this bill is inside the urban growth boundary. It's not rural land. It's urban land inside the urban growth boundary. When Metro brings land into the UGB, it retains its rural zoning until such time as the city or county amends its comprehensive plan or zoning ordinance and plans it for urban uses. So when this land was brought into the urban growth boundary, it essentially became part of Clackamas County, was unincorporated. It essentially went from rural Clackamas County to urban unincorporated Clackamas County. But it retained all of the original, the rural zoning that was in place at the time it was brought in. And that was done in 2002. In 2005, the residents of at least a portion of this area that was brought into the urban growth boundary decided that they would incorporate. And so the city of Damascus was incorporated in 2005. All of this land still retained its rural zoning, so most of it is zoned for EFU or forest land, despite the fact that it's inside the urban growth boundary. It still has farm or forest zoning on it. But the residents in the area decided to incorporate, and the city of Damascus was formed in 2005. Because they were formed in 2005 as a result of this 197-757, the city of Damascus had 4 years from that date to get a comprehensive plan and zoning ordinance adopted and acknowledged, sent to DLCD and presented to LCDC for acknowledgement. So that time frame ended in early 2009. The city has had difficulty getting their comprehensive plan and zoning ordinance finished and sent to the department for acknowledgement. And today we're April 9th, 2013. The city has yet to have an acknowledged comprehensive plan and zoning ordinance. So we're essentially 8 years passed, or eight years since the date was, since the city was incorporated, and 11 years since the land was originally brought into the UGB. The city has yet to have an acknowledged comprehensive plan and zoning ordinance, and these properties that are within the urban growth boundary retain their original farm and forest and rural residential, whatever the rural zoning was in place at the time that the land was brought in. The problem that the city has in getting their comprehensive plan and zoning ordinance acknowledged is exacerbated by a provision in their charter that requires the voters of the city of Damascus to approve a comp plan or zoning ordinance before it is forwarded to LCDC for acknowledgement. The council a few years back had had finished a comp plan and zoning ordinance. As a result of that charter requirement, they sent it to their voters where it was rejected on by a 2-to-1 margin, and then hence not forwarded to LCDC for acknowledgement. All the while, the property owners within the city are essentially in limbo because there isn't anything that they can do with their property. They can't rezone the property, and so they're stuck in essentially a no-man's land. What Senate Bill 708 tries to do, and there are amendments to the bill to put some flesh on the bone. We don't have the dash ones back from LC yet, but we've submitted them to LC. Excuse me, to LC, and hope to present those to the committee as soon as we can. As quickly as they can come out from LC, we'll certainly get them to the committee. What the intent of Senate Bill 708 is to give property owners in the city of Damascus an opportunity to go to Clackamas County and submit a land use application and have that application processed by Clackamas County. We can't do that now because the land is within the city of Damascus. But we hope, if this bill were to pass, to send that to Clackamas County to give Clackamas County an opportunity to use its comprehensive plan and zoning ordinance, the one that it has in place that's been acknowledged by LCDC as being in compliance with all the land use goals, to use that comprehensive plan and to have property owners be able to go essentially to the county and have the county make the planning decision for them until such time, and only until such time, as Damascus gets its comprehensive plan and zoning ordinance acknowledged. So once once the city of Damascus completes its mission and its task and gets its comprehensive plan and zoning ordinance acknowledged, at that point, anyone filing a land use application after that date would go to the city of Damascus as they would in any other city in this state. But until that time, we want to try and give property owners the ability to have some kind of relief and to be able to submit a land use application, because for the last 11 years they've been stuck, and it's time. 11 years is a long time for folks. There are folks out there that would like to move forward with, now that their land is urban and is within an urban growth boundary, they'd like to move forward with some development, but they can't do that until, at least without this bill, until the time that Damascus gets its comprehensive plan and zoning ordinance acknowledged. And we hope that soon. I know there's a vote, I know that the city council is working on their comprehensive plan and trying to do what LCDC wants them to do. But again, even if they are able to get something finished, they have to send that out to the voters. And if the voters reject that, then then they go back to square one. This bill would only take effect at the start of 2014. So if Damascus gets its comp plan and zoning ordinance approved by the council, acknowledged by or approved by the voters, and then acknowledged by LCDC, then the bill goes away. So it may have no shelf life. It may have a very short shelf life if it passes. But it gives the property owners that own land in the city somewhere that they can go now and get their land use application submitted. We made amendments to the bill, as I indicated, that are in the dash one to take care of a couple of problems. The League of Oregon Cities identified a problem with the current language of the bill.
that would bring Lapine and Kaiser, and there may be another city within the ambit of the bill. It's certainly not our intent to deal with Kaiser or Lapine, and so we've added some amendments and recommend those to the committee that deal with those that take the bill out of take those cities out of the bill. And we've added language that specifies that the bill really only applies to Damascus and doesn't apply going forward to a city that, say, is incorporated in 2018 or 2020. The bill is designed just to deal with this Damascus issue and get us to the point where after 11 years we can do something while the city tries to finish its task. So with that, I don't know if the chair would want me to answer questions now or
we'll do the panel and then we'll
okay.
I'm Lowell Patton, and perhaps the Senator Roblin and the committee members, I'm probably the largest property owner in the Damascus city limits. And long before the city of Damascus came into being, I had purchased property in the Carver area and expected someday to be able to develop it. We ran a sawmill there for a good many years. At the peak, we probably employed around 150 people. So we were a major source of income for the area. When LCDC and the zoning first came into being, an area next to me was taken into the original urban growth boundary. But they came to my fence line and followed it around and left my property outside of the urban growth boundary, I guess thinking, well, there's a sawmill there and there's some timberland there, and so it's not ready for development. But I still had the idea in mind that eventually, because we were too close to the Portland area and the whole metropolitan area, that someday it should be developed. However, and I had people from Clackamas County Planning Department, when I would voice this, come to me and say, but there'll never be sewer out there. We're way out in the country. There'll never be sewer out there. Well, a few years have passed. I have a sewer pump station on my own property. I've contributed land to the county for expansion of the street system that runs next to my property, and been a good asset to the area, but we're too blocked from doing anything right now. And we hired a professional planning staff to do a master plan for us, because they felt that originally, the original city council thought that we had enough property here that we should be able to do our own master plan. So we put all of the effort into that, and then some planners came on board with the city of Damascus and thought, well, that wouldn't be fair to all of the rest of the people, even though most of the area doesn't yet have services. That we do. We've got certainly water. We've got the sewer system. We've got a state highway right through the property. So we should be able to develop something.
But I've, like I mentioned before, I've been held back simply because the city of Damascus is, or we are in the city of Damascus. If there was some way we could develop outside of the city of Damascus or in the county or any way, then our problem would be behind us. But we've been kind of held hostage for the last 8 years and can do nothing. I just added it up. I guess it was probably 45 years ago that I first got that sawmill operation in Carver, and that's about half of my life span so far, because I've been spending the last 42 years trying to develop something and have been unable to do it.
Thank you. You can pull that mic over just a little bit.
No.
Chair Roland, members of the committee, my name is William Cox. My address is 0244 Southwest California Street in Portland. I am an attorney who has concentrated his practice since 1976 on land use issues throughout the state. In 79, when the Land Use Board of Appeals was first established, I was appointed to that board with two other attorneys to help establish it and get it running, which I did. Sat on that for 4 years and was participated in some 500 decisions. I have been working with Mr. Patton for about 6 years trying to find a solution to his problems. I think that I have as much experience as most anyone around Oregon now about the Oregon land use system. And I have been unable to find a way out of this Gordian knot. Mr. Patton, had he known that the city was going to include his property when it annexed, or when it incorporated, he would have been better off just to stay in the county, but he wasn't given the option. Had he stayed in the county, he would have been inside the urban growth boundary, had access to the county codes, county comp plan, everything that is now what we're asking for some 8 years later. We have tried everything short of taking a case into the circuit court, which in order to achieve our ends, if possible, we would have had to include LCDC, Metro, and the city as defendants, because they were not doing the jobs that they were supposed to have been doing under the state land use laws. I did not believe, given Mr. Patton's age, that going to the Supreme Court a couple of times would be beneficial, but now as I look back on it, maybe it would have been faster. I am supporting this bill because I don't know what else we can do. It's not only that the city has a problem, unlike other cities in this state, because through the initiative process, they passed a law that said any land use planning document or zoning document that was adopted and has to be approved by the city as a whole, the citizens, has to be held for a vote before it can even be submitted to LCDC. LCDC has put them on a short line, they say. They did that 4 years ago, and it must have been longer than they thought that it was going to be. But anyway, now we are faced with a situation where even if they do, the city does get a plan together, which I'm sure you'll hear that they're working on it. They've been working on it for 8 years. If they do get a plan together, it still has to go to the voters. And that's not until November. An additional key element of what we're facing is that in addition to the initiative that was passed regarding sending the comp plans to the voters, they also passed a initiative that says any financial agreement to fund SDCs, infrastructure, anything, that also has to go in front of the city the citizens as a separate item. So even if they pass the state, even if they were able to send this to LCDC, the voters said, okay, that represents what we kind of think, send it. They still got no way to fund it. So my belief is that if Lowell wants to see this other than a place for him to rest his weary bones, we've got to do something. And I think Mr. Honeycutt has come up with probably the best solution that I've seen in the long term that I've been working on this.
Any questions, Mr. Patton?
Just one.
Senator Boettcher.
Mr. Patton, how many acres are we talking about?
About 244 acres.
And what's the zoning on it right now? Follow up.
Well, it's still county. It still has the rural zones on it, like farm forest on the bulk of it, and then a portion where the sawmill was located. There, we're not running a sawmill any longer, but. We're almost as bad off as Grants Pass as far as sawmills are concerned, but I worked in one in Merlin. So anyway, where the sawmill was located, they did make that rural industrial. So there's about 24 acres of rural industrial. And all of the rest of the zoning is farm forest.
Thank you.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman,
oh,
if
yes.
I could kind of add to a little bit of what Senator Bartschinger, sorry if I butchered your name, but.
It's open for debate.
I wanted to point out that the master plan that Mr. Patton had done by one of the best land use land architects, landscape architects in the state, was done to comply with the only codes that we knew at the time, and that was the counties. In that, there's room under his plan for some 660 residences. There's room for up to 50 acres of industrial land. There's room for a large addition to the little burg of Carver for commercial. It represents a lot of money to the community and a lot of jobs to the community. And for as long as he's been working on this, it's a shame that we have lost all of that.
Okay. Further questions? Seeing none. Thank you all for being here. Next, we're going to have Steve Bonnet, I guess, the mayor of Damascus, and William Ware, councilor, and W.C. Cox.
That was me.
Ah, that was you. Thank you. Oh.
That's good. Bringing my WD-40.
Yeah. Greetings, Chair Roblin and the committee. I'm Steve Spinnett, and I'm the mayor of Damascus and have been since 2010. I am a proponent of SB 708 as it deals directly with Damascus. As you've heard so far, the Damascus area has been brought into the UGB in 2002 and incorporated as a city in 2004. That's 11 years and counting. I'd like to summarize some items, some issues, and I'd like to give you some examples, too, so that you can get a pulse on what the community feels. Unfortunately, there's political realities that have been ignored in Damascus for too long. For example...
I'm sorry, I just need to get a clarification. Mayor, did you say you are a proponent or an opponent?
I am a proponent.
I am on
the side of SB 708. For example, last month, Council ignored our Planning Commission's recommendation to go with Metro's Title III standards on development restrictions adjacent to streams. Council voted by motion for the 100-foot minimum stream buffers on all streams, including seasonal creeks, and that's a development restriction on each side. This is a political stalemate, which is a great hardship for the people of Damascus.
It's an understatement, I think.
Yeah. The 100-foot minimum stream setback was a major reason why the voters rejected the comprehensive plan by a 2-to-1 vote in May of 2011. I would also say if there was a vote to go before the people right now, I think the comp plan would fail by the same margin or greater margin. Again, Council ignored the Planning Commission's recommendation voting for a 25% open space policy on all employment lands. Yes, 1/4 of all the new commercial industrial lands must have a common area that cannot be used for the intended use of that business. The property owner can make a quote-unquote payment in lieu of to the city to develop the open space. Yeah, and that's correct. A property owner can make a payment in lieu just to build on the property that's his or hers in the first place. I noticed that other cities are doing a lot of different things to get business to come into their cities. In Damascus, we're doing the opposite. In 2004, the people voted to incorporate as a city, even with a 25% property tax increase. Some people say 28%, some people say 30%, but a significant increase in property tax we voted for incorporation. Believing that we'd have an acknowledged comprehensive plan within 4 years. The people of Damascus need some relief, and I believe that SB 708 gives that. Allowing the planning authority to go to Clackamas County until the city of Damascus achieves an acknowledged comp plan will also bring honesty to the process locally. I'd love to blame the state land use policies. I love to blame Metro, but this problem is local. Most likely, the ballot in November will include a measure to disincorporate the city. I believe SB 708 will help in dissuading the voters to disincorporate because it gives them some relief. Metro Title 11 precludes any subdividing below 20 acres, any increase in residential density, and any increase of commercial or industrial lands from the time the lands are brought into the UGB, which was 2002, until an acknowledged comprehensive plan is achieved. And we don't have that achievement date, and I'm afraid it's going to be longer than shorter. One property owner, and you just heard, I'm referencing the one property owner that you heard from. Another property owner who is 90 owns 117 acres that have been in his family since the late 1800s, five generations. He can't do a thing with his property. Another citizen owns 30 acres, and his name, Tilstrom, is well known in the community, and it goes back generations. He has 30 acres, and he would like to subdivide and give his children land for development, but no, he can't touch it. Countless residential and business owners want to expand, but no, they can't do it. The metro region is in desperate need of industrial lands. Damascus, to a degree, can help provide that. SB 708 is about liberating the citizens, dramatically improving the local economy, and holding local policymakers accountable. I urge you to vote the passage of SB 708.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman Roblin and Senators. My name is William Ware, City of Damascus Councilor. I'm here speaking for myself and not for any other member of this Damascus Council. The citizens of Damascus voted for incorporation in 2004. A comprehensive plan was finally passed by the previous City Council in December 2010. The citizens of Damascus then rejected that plan by popular vote of 2-1 the following May 2011. Since then, our city has been working through our planning department, citizen committees, council, town halls, and citizen input to rewrite our comprehensive plan. LCDC has imposed a deadline on us of July 2013 for the City Council to approve and then pass on a comprehensive plan for voter approval on this November ballot. During all this time, a number of citizens have expressed deep concerns of how Damascus will develop for the future. A whole spectrum of issues of concerning land use has put many citizens at odds with each other. They're worried about their own stakes in the future in Damascus. Adding to the tension is the threat of a disincorporation referendum that more than likely will be on the November ballot. I believe that passage of Senate Bill 708 will relieve anxiety in Damascus among a number of citizens. Residential and commercial activity could then start in the interim while the city completes its own plan. Private individuals could partition their properties or sell their properties. Businesses could expand. There may be very well a lessening of enthusiasm among those in favor of disincorporation, as there would be finally a light at the end of the tunnel. We can continue to build our city under local control and direct citizen input only if we have a city and not be an unincorporated area of Clackamas County. The proposed amendment regarding a city being the authority for land use, once that city has a comprehensive plan in place, is critical to give Damascus an opportunity to regain control of its land use decision. So I urge you to vote for Senate Bill 708. Thank you.
Any questions for this panel? No, we're good. Thank you both.
Thank you.
So next we have Gary Schmidt, Mike McAllister, and Paul Hibernick.
Chairman Roblin, can I go with Mr.
Sure.
Mr. Meisinger after these two fellows?
Was there a Bill Cox that we didn't call before? That's you again. We got you down there twice. That was okay. We're good. We're good then. So we'll go with you two.
Chair Roblin and members of the committee, I'm Gary Schmidt, Director of Public and Government Affairs for Clackamas County, along with Mike McAllister, who's the Planning Director for Clackamas County. We're here to speak about Senate Bill 708, and there is a document being presented. The Clackamas County Board of Commissioners at this time is neutral on Senate Bill 708. They asked that if this bill does go forward, that you consider two possible amendments or changes to the bill, which you can see in the attached letter. The first is on cost, that the cost for the there be full cost recovery to the county, not only in application fees, but also in any potential legal challenges or appeals brought forth by the potential land use applications. And second is indemnity, that should indeed the state mandate the county become involved in planning, that the county be indemnified from any potential claims arising from a potential legal challenge or liability risk, either through the city, through the state or the city to protect the county in such an instance. So we ask you to consider those should you go forward on the bill, and I think that would meet the needs of the county if those were addressed. Happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Thank you.
I have no comments.
You're just there.
You have questions.
Any questions for this panel?
No, thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So now we have Paul for Nick, Steve Meisinger, and Aaron Doyle. And I think that's everyone.
Senator Roblin, Council. My name is Steve Meisinger. I work for General Distributors, and we're one of those property owners that would like to build on a property. And we have 23 acres located with full facilities within the city of Damascus. And the property was purchased about 5 years ago with the intention of a building warehouse facility. I'm here to support the bill because we'd obviously like to get that warehouse built. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin and members of the committee, I'm Paul Ribernick. I represent GDI and have been active with them for 4.5 years. We've worked with the city as part of their comprehensive plan process and gone through all those things, and we've just kind of reached an impasse. David Honeycutt did a wonderful job of explaining what the problem is. I think the mayor did a fabulous job of explaining what the real political problems are. We're just some folks with a warehouse that's 60,000 feet. It needs to be 120,000 feet. We've got 120 jobs now. We think we can expand those jobs out significantly more, and we have a $19 million economic impact in Clackamas County. We think we can expand that footprint, but we can't do it under the existing land use situation. Senate Bill 708 would provide an interim solution, as the mayor said and as Councillor Weir said. It specifically allows the process to go back to the city once the city has a comprehensive plan in place and is ready to go. It does not de-annex properties from the city. You remain in the city, which is important for the city to remain whole ultimately when it gets its planning program together. The county standards would apply. It's drafted technically, but the county standards would apply, and not a lot of other standards. For example, the Title 11 standards for Metro, which would, if you're in unincorporated Clackamas County, that would apply normally. It's been exempted out so that just the county acknowledged comprehensive plan standards and zoning ordinances would apply, so that the county knows what the standards it would make its decision under, rather than a whole series of other standards that might be applicable. The county specifically asked for that provision, and that's in part of the amendments that you will see. The amendments also allow the county to charge the full and actual cost of the process, which is, I think, fair, because we're asking them to do something that they normally wouldn't do. And just for the committee's information, these charges will be significantly in excess of what a county resident would pay, because they're only about, according to my conversations with Mike McAllister, the planning director, their current fees recover about 30% of what it costs them to do a comprehensive plan, for example. Anyone asking for permission under 708 would be paying 100% of the staff cost associated with the plan. Urban density standards could be applied, which is critical. As Mr. Patton said, he can't get what he needs unless urban density standards could be applied. That's not a problem because it remains in the city and it's within the urban growth boundary. The amendments are specifically worded so that it cuts off. A city would have had to been in place on January 1, 2013 to take advantage of this, meaning that there's no forward-looking, and this is what Mr. Honeycutt said about cities in the future, would not be affected under this. It pretty much limits it to this particular issue. I talked with DLCD this morning, and they confirmed that Kaiser is acknowledged and Lapine is acknowledged, so the bill with the amendments is written shouldn't affect how they work. The last thing, I just let you know that LCDC and DLCD have worked with the city, and the city has worked hard on this project to get it done. LCDC simply doesn't have the power to make any changes. It can't take the planning back and do it itself, and what I think Mr. Honeycutt has come up with is a plan that would allow the land use process to remain intact and robust and yet allow property owners to do something with their property.
Tara Roblin, members of the committee. For the record, Aaron Doyle with the League of Oregon Cities. I'm talking primarily to the bill as written because I don't know what the amendments look like at this point. And I do recognize that Damascus does have a problem and that we do need to find a solution to it. But the solution as drafted raises a number of concerns for me, particularly if it were to be adopted for any city in the future. It has been mentioned that there are a couple of other cities that have incorporated since 1982. Two of them, Kaiser and Lapine, took 6 years in order to finalize their comprehensive plan and have it fully acknowledged. Before that, it was partially acknowledged, as was Damascus's plan, before it was overturned by the voters for Damascus. So for me, it's unclear what the effects on future cities might be until I see the language for the amendment. But at this point, my biggest concern is this leaves cities in any city that would be under this rubric would be in a difficult position if a county makes a change in zoning or comprehensive plan that disagrees with the comprehensive plan they're trying to develop. If the county makes a change to place fully residential in an area and the city had been planning to do mixed use in that area, they have to re-amend the comprehensive plan that they're in the middle of working on, so they're going to have to split their attentions, or they're going to have to change their intentions and change the comprehensive plan, which is clearly at this point already taking too long. The other option they would have is to actually split their attentions and continue working on the comprehensive plan that they wish to complete and appeal the decision by the county to LUBA and pay the expenses in that direction. The city wouldn't have its costs covered for that. It would be a cost that they'd have to take on. So these are just a couple of issues that I noticed when reading through the bill. If the city loses its voice in the comprehensive planning process by having these issues turned over to the county, I think you can set up a legal quagmire. But if these amendments truly do focus this to Damascus, I would withdraw my concerns, but I think it's something to consider. Here's a copy now in yellow. So I will review the amendments, but I do want to make sure that it also does revert the power back to the cities at the time they finish their comprehensive plan at this point. So I will review the amendments and amend my position accordingly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions for this group? Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wanted to speak on Senate Bill 708? Seeing none, we're going to close our public hearing on Senate Bill 708, and we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 816. And we'll have a short explanation of where we are with this bill, and it's one that we heard most recently.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 816 we heard on April 4th, and we had the Dash 2 amendment that was introduced, and it basically just clarified that OSU would collaborate with CUNY College or high school workforce development or outreach programs, and it replaces the purpose to provide science-based support and value-added market analysis with science-based research and innovation. And then it just clarifies the appropriation of money, which is just a technical fix. So we did get those introduced, I think, the last committee meeting. And this is the bill that establishes the Agricultural Experiment Station Fermentation Sciences and Value-Added Program at Oregon State University. We do have our fiscal statement back, and it's in front of you. And then there is no revenue impact on this bill.
And it does have a subsequent referral?
It does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
So, the pleasure of our committee, would you like to make an amendment?
Sure. Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated 4-4-2013 to Senate Bill 816.
Senator Bezier moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated 4-4-13. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Bezier.
Yes, Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 816 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Bearsugar moves Senate Bill 816 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? You wanted to go to revenue. Just kidding. Any other concerns? Is there anyone in opposition of doing this? I see no opposition. It is adopted. We don't need to not put a person because it's going to Ways and Means. So I'm pretty excited that happened that quickly.
Yeah.
So we'll get it on its way, and we'll hope that those Ways and Means people can figure out what to do next. We do
on the guest list.
Okay.
Very good. So our other bills that we haven't worked have already been scheduled for later, so we're okay there. And any other business for the committee? If not, we are adjourned.